Hi, everybody. This is Fee Waybill, and you're listening to the What Difference Does It Make podcast. Please stay tuned.
Hello, Holly.
Good afternoon, Dave.
How are we today on the What Difference Does It Make podcast?
We are fabulous today on the What Difference Does It Make podcast. This is another particularly good day, a most excellent day.
Look at you. Good job.
Thank you.
The reason we mentioned that is because our guest, he was part of the Future Council. Can you name the future, the two others that were on the Future Council in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
I can't. Can you name them?
I can.
Tell me.
Of course, well, the woman, Martha Davis of the Motels.
Yes.
And taking center, Clarence Clemons from the E Street Band.
Oh my gosh, that's right.
Yes.
So,
and Fee Waybill, who is our guest today of the Tubes.
This really is a spectacular day. I'm very, very excited to talk to Fee. He's had quite an interesting career, more than interesting.
Also, because he's so interesting, stuff that I'm going to take out of our podcast will be on our YouTube page, right, Holly?
So yes, there will be plenty of outtakes on our YouTube channel. So just when you go to YouTube, just look for the What Difference Does It Make podcast.
Yes, so please subscribe to our YouTube page. Holly posts some wonderful things on there. It's always fun to see. And, you know, every Friday, new episode. So always subscribe to the What Difference Does It Make podcast, and you'll always get a surprise every Friday. Don't you love surprises? Surprises are fun sometimes.
I love surprises. I love surprises.
All right. Well, today's surprise is Fee Waybill of the Tubes. And so let's get started on the What Difference Does It Make podcast.
Okay, you guys are good? Everybody's good?
Yeah.
We're set. Thank you. Thanks for setting us up.
Oh, you know what? It's so funny. It's always the spouse who helps set up.
Yeah, exactly. She takes care of all my Zoom stuff. Her name's Elizabeth. She makes sure that, I'm wearing something nice and the hair is good and the background is good. And
you're perfectly framed, perfectly dressed, hair, not a hair out of place. You're perfect. She did a great job.
Although, I'm wondering now what that duck is in the background, that golden goose. What's going on there?
Yeah, that's a big duck sculpture. I requested that. I like that, a duck sculpture. Yeah, we're in the art room. We have we turned our garage into an art room. And my wife likes to paint. And right now she's like gotten into pottery. We got a potter's wheel, and she's been making pots and bowls and glasses and just, we're buying clay left and right and tools, and she loves it. It's great.
But she's actually an artist. This isn't just a pandemic project.
No, she's been doing the painting thing for a long, long time. We managed to actually finish the conversion of the garage during the pandemic. And then it's funny because, she was into this pottery stuff before, but now it's just completely, you can't even get the guy on the phone. You call him up. No, sold out. You want a kiln? Oh, well, that's 9 months waiting time. Everyone, the world of pottery is just exploded during the pandemic. So, I don't know. It's really fun. She got for Father's Day, which is weird because I don't have any children, but for Father's Day, she got us lessons at a place here in Los Angeles that shows you how to throw pottery. It was great, and we loved it, and we got really into it. We went back like four times and kept making bowls and this and that, and so she's kind of continued on with it. It's been really fun.
Is this a place where someone who doesn't know anything could actually learn?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know anything. Neither of us knew anything. Yeah. And they sit you down in front of a wheel and they just walk you right, just show you how to slab, put a big hunk of clay on the wheel and then center it and then pull it up and then push it down and make a bowl. They pretty much only do bowls. So,
I want to do this.
All right. Yeah. Are you turning them into bongs or are they just bowls? What's going on?
Well, no, not bongs. Okay. We haven't got that far along yet.
Okay, you will.
For big vases, and she's really into it. It's great.
Oh, that's fun. The drummer in the Tubes also is, he's an artist as well.
Yeah, pictures. Prairie is an artist, and we did, you know, we do all our own artwork. We do our own album covers. We do our own t-shirts. We are any kind of artistic endeavor is done by in-house. And Mike, when Mike Cotton was in the band originally, Mike was and Prairie were like a team, and they would we designed our own sets, and we designed, you know, everything about artistically about the show we did ourselves.
Okay, so speaking of design, your newest album, which was actually released last year, right? Fee Wable Rides Again.
Uh-huh.
The cover of it?
Yeah.
Was that a design from someone?
The cover, actually it was. It was Prairie. I mean, not the photograph. He didn't take the photograph. A guy named Brian Randall took the photograph who lives with Sandra Bullock.
I've heard of her. Oh, and is he in Austin? She's still Austin-based, right?
No, they moved to Wyoming. Not
they're all going off the grid, I tell you.
Yeah, they just built a big house there in Wyoming. But no, but then Prairie did everything else. Prairie did the logo. Prairie did he put the whole package together for me with the horse in the middle and the, you know, yeah, it was definitely, he's the greatest.
Nice to have that in the band, like to have all that art concentrated in one place.
Yeah.
Or talent, I should say.
His art studio is where we rehearse. He's got a little studio in San Francisco, underground studio, and or a below ground level studio. And we rehearse there.
Yeah, the Tubes are going back on the road. Does everyone fly into San Francisco?
Oh, yeah. Well, everybody lives up north except me.
Okay.
I'm the only, Rick lives in Modesto. Prairie lives in San Francisco. Dave lives in Santa Cruz. Everybody is pretty much up north there. So I fly in. We haven't done a gig for 19 months. Yeah. So we actually did have to rehearse. We were up there and spent a week rehearsing in the little rehearsal hall. And, you know, it's been so long. I thought, oh, well, you know, I'm not going to remember any lyrics at all. But I did. It's like, you know, after 45 years, I mean, you don't have to think about it. You just open your mouth and the lyrics come out. You know, they came out. I didn't even think about it. And I realized, oh, I know all these songs. Oh, yeah. I remember how to do this. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, kind of. I think the pandemic actually played into that fear of I'm losing something.
Yeah. Oh, are you kidding? Oh, I mean, it was especially for you know, for me, for, you know, my life is live performance on the stage. And that just completely went away. Yeah. And no gatherings. No, I mean, it's all about gatherings. So I had to say my anxiety level was pretty high. I guess now, you know, the more and more places are starting to mandate vaccinations, which I think is wonderful.
Now, you're from Arizona originally.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Okay. I grew up in Scottsdale.
Although I did watch, I watched an old Letterman interview with you. They allow you into Arizona? It was this interview from 1983. You kind of, you didn't speak kindly on the people of Arizona.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm so glad I left. I mean, they're still counting votes.
Yeah.
For 2020. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's, you know, it's always been Republican controlled, always. Ever since Barry Goldwater, you know, and so, you know, I just, I can't understand it. I just don't get it. But, you know, I don't go there either. So, I mean, we're going to fly in, we're going to do a gig at the casino, and then we're going to fly out the next day.
So what is a Tube show going to be like in 2021? Is it how is it different?
Well, we're going to kind of continue. We were doing kind of mid 2019. We started doing the Completion Backward Principles show, where we start the show and play the entire album in order. And so we're continuing with that. I think only we're doing a. Ooh, hold on.
Wait a second. What is what's Hold on a second. What's going on?
Is someone assigned to that ringtone?
That's my phone. That's my horse. Wait. Sammy, I'm doing an interview, okay? Sammy is works for the management company. He's the son of my manager, Jonathan Wolfson. And that's also what happened in 2019. We finally signed with a management company. We hadn't been with a management company for, gosh, 10 years, maybe. I was the man. I did everything.
Yeah.
I did the travel, the hotels, the tax return, everything. And we actually, thanks to, once again, my wife, a friend of hers, a lawyer guy, a husband of her friend, said, "Oh, you know, you guys really need a management company." And I said, "Yeah, no shit." And so he got this, he talked this manager, Jonathan, into coming and seeing us here in LA at the Canyon Club in Agora Hills. And he said, "Man, I want to manage you guys." And so I said, "Okay, great."
here's your application. Please fill this out.
It's a Live Nation company. And he also manages Hall & Oates, and he manages Loverboy also. And Mike Reno and I have been friends for years and years and years. And so that's kind of fun playing with them. And it is fun, not kind of. And he's a great singer. God, he's such a good singer. So we took over. So in the middle of 2019, we got picked up by a new agency and Live Nation and a management company. And we started doing Completion Backward Principle. So we're continuing that. It's fun. It's a good show. It's a really good show.
I mean, it's a good album. So let's talk a little bit about Completion Backward Principle. This was produced by, I had no idea, but after listening to it, like, oh, it makes sense. The producer, David Foster. Why would a guy like a Fee Waybill be attracted to David Foster and the band that recorded like Chicago? And I mean, I've seen the documentary now of David Foster and how insane he is. Does that paint a good picture of what it was like?
I mean, he did us before Chicago.
Okay.
We were at A&M Records from 75 until 1980. We made 5 records for them and we never really had a hit. We were kind of stuck in the genre of a cool cult band, you know. Well, that only lasts for so long, you know. And then originally Jerry Moss is a great guy. And Herb is a great guy. And Herb, you know, we used to go to the studio in, you know, it used to be on La Brea.
Yeah. Love it.
And we used to go to the studio and hang around and, you know, do interviews. And we actually painted the walls with giant flying records, you know, and Herb would just sit there playing his horn all day long. He had a little studio on the side of the parking lot, and he'd just sit there and he'd just play his horn. And just, it was so cool. It got to the point where we just couldn't figure out how to get a hit on the radio. And they just, you know, they really didn't want to release us, but they pretty much had to. And they released us. And we had a friend a guy named Bobby Colombi. And Bobby Colombi used to be the drummer of Blood, Sweat, and Tears. So he was a musician and he loved Prairie. He thought he was so great. And he probably still does. And so Bobby was had moved on to being an A&R guy at Capitol. And he said, I can get you a gig at Capitol, but you pretty much need to get on the radio. You know, you need to start selling some records and get on the radio. And David Foster, and he knew, I mean, he's the one that brought David Foster in. And David Foster had just, he just done Boogie Wonderland with Earth, Wind, and Fire. And he had just had a number one song with After the Love Is Gone. And he had never done a rock and roll album. It was always R&B. And so he was a little skeptical also. And he came up to San Francisco and he goes, well, you know, I don't know. And we played it, you know, we started playing songs for him. And, you know, we had a bunch of songs. We had Don't Want to Wait Anymore and Amnesia and Attack of the 50-Foot Woman and all these songs on Completion Backward. And he thought, wow, this is cool, you know, and he started helping us arrange stuff, and he was a brilliant arranger, and it just all kind of clicked. And then we went to the studio and we realized, wow, this guy is such a perfectionist. He's not going to, you know, he's not going to let anything slide, nothing. And the first vocal I did was Amnesia. It took me a week, you know, right? I sang 3 hours. I mean, you know, and this was before, obviously before Pro Tools. This was where you couldn't fly anything in. You couldn't fix anything. You couldn't edit anything. It was all 24 track tape. And, you know, I had never been pushed that hard before. And, you know, Todd Rundgren did the record before. And Todd was kind of, you know, like he would kind of go, okay, yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, that's a great feel. You know, well, David didn't care about feel. It had to be perfect. So I would sing it again and again and again. And, you know, I sing for 4 hours and then come back the next day and goes, well, let's start over. And then let's do it again. And then, but it made me a better singer, that's for sure. It seems we stood and talked like this before. Why can't I remember? Did we share something more?
Because you'd already had 4 albums out and like, okay, we've done it one way, you know, we've done it the rock and roll way. This guy might know what's going on. So I'm going to have the patience to deal with this, that you might not have had that patience when it was your debut record.
Well, yeah. I mean, his reputation preceded him, didn't it? And we all knew that. And we all knew, God, if you can just, you know, if you just do what he says and, you know, it's going to work out. I mean, our first album was Al Cooper, and we just didn't know what the hell we were doing. And Al kind of led us through. And then we did an album with Ken Scott, who, you know, had been an engineer on Beatles records. And Ken Scott was, I mean, he really had a feeling for engineering. But as far as producing goes, I mean, I don't think he said 10 words to us the whole time. We'd go do a take, and he'd sit there and and we'd go, well, what do you think, Ken? And he would just go, wasn't perfect. And that was it. Yeah. That was all he said. Okay, well, let's do it again then. You know, so we really never had. And then the third album was a live album, Pete Henderson. And that was a great album, live in London at Hammersmith Odeon. And then the fourth album was Now, and that was by a producer named John Anthony. We drove him insane, pretty much drove him insane. He was an Englishman. He was very proper. And we drove him insane. And halfway through the album, he just disappeared. He just said, okay, that's it. I'm gone. And he got on a plane and flew back to England.
What were you guys doing? How did you set off your producer? What's going on there?
How do you drive a producer insane?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess, you know, it was a crazy schedule. We all still lived in San Francisco at the time, and we had come to LA, and we were playing the Whiskey a Go-Go, and we played the Whiskey for, I think, that's what kind of drove me insane. We played the Whiskey two shows a night for 3 weeks in a row.
Oh, a residency kind of.
Yeah. Nice. And then at 2 o'clock in the morning, we're all drunk out of our minds. We would go to the studio to record. We would record from like 2 until 10.
Yeah.
And then, you know, go home and sleep all day. And he had never worked like that before. And here we come in the studio after, you know, doing two sets at the Whiskey, and we're all completely, you know, high as kites. It was, he just couldn't handle it. He couldn't, he just said, what, you know, can't we just do a regular session? No, sorry. We're sleeping all day because we got a gig at night. And so that was insane. And then he ended up leaving. And so it was left to us, and we had the second engineer on the project was a guy named Don Wood, who was he was like our front of house sound guy for touring. And so he took over, and we finished the record with him. And that was not a great record. And I mean, there were some wacky songs on it, but the great part about that record was we had Captain Beefheart come and play on our record.
Nice.
And we were all huge fans of Captain Beefheart. And he played on Kathy's Clone, and we did a Beefheart song, My Head Is to My Only House Unless It Rains. And oh, so that was really cool. And that's the best thing about that album.
Talking Tubes with B-Way Bill. We're having a great time, but as we always do, we take a break. So that is what we shall do.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shout It Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus meal plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
Welcome back to the What Difference Does It Make podcast and our guest, Fee Waybill.
When a band is playing live so many times, it's like they're running on all cylinders and it feels like that's probably what you guys were thinking at that time. Like, this is, we're playing great. Let's capture this in the studio. And it just, it didn't happen for you, huh?
Yeah, it just didn't really happen. And then we did Remote Control with Todd Rundgren. And like I said, Todd was, you know, he just kind of, oh, if it feels good, oh, great. It's, you know.
I do love Primetime, though. I still think that's a great song. You guys still play that?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's a duet. We don't have any, we don't have a girl in the band anymore. Actually, when we turned it into a punk song, you know, what was it, 2018, I think, we went to England and we opened with, opened for Alice Cooper in big, you know, Wembley Arena and big, like 20,000 seaters. Nice. And Primetime was a hit in England. A single, released as a single, and it was a hit there. And so we turned it into a punk song so that we could play it there. But we haven't played it since. Show, gosh, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why people keep coming back, because other than we're brilliant,
naturally,
but we keep changing the shows, and I keep doing new characters, and we drag up songs that we haven't played forever, and we, you know, every year or so, normally in the past, we do a new show, and we did like a Fellini show, we did La Dolce Vita kind of show. And we did a noir film show, and we constantly change. So anyway, we're thinking about what the next show is, because once we do all these bunch of dates that we've never played Completion Backward Principle, we got to have a new show. And so that's going to require, you know, costuming and rehearsal and figuring it out. And so we're thinking about doing Remote Control and doing a whole Remote Control revival and do that album top to bottom. The thing with Remote Control was we only had a month, and that was it. We had a month to put this together, and we didn't have any songs. We had just come off tour in November. We took December off, and then we had January. to do the album and then to release it in February and go out on tour again in March. We did that over and over again. We did, you know, March to November. We did that like 12 years in a row and then go back in and do an album and then go back out. And so we had tours, we had tour dates booked. We had everything booked and we had only so much time to do that record and we didn't have songs. And I had read this book. I kind of came up with the concept of remote control. I didn't come up with the concept. I plagiarized the concept from Jerzy Kosinski, who wrote Being There. And at the time I read this book, he wrote Painted Birdie. I really love his books. And I read Being There. And I thought, God, this is so great. You know, the kid who never gets outside, who never has a real experience. It's all virtual. He's, you know, he's shuttered. His parents don't care about him. He sits there and watches TV all day long. So I thought, God, well, this is what a great idea. And so I told Todd about the idea of here's a kid who just watched. It's all. And that's kind of the ironic part, is that that's kind of the way all of us grew up in Arizona, because it was 150 outside and you didn't go outside during the day. You were inside watching TV all day long and you're watching, you know, the Rifleman and Wanted Dead or Alive and TV Westerns all day long, The Virginian and, you know, Paladin and I loved all those and cowboy movies. And so that's kind of the way we grew up, is watching TV. And I thought, well, this is so perfect. And so we kind of adapted that whole idea and we had no songs. So the plan was we were recording at a little studio in San Jose, California. And we would go in the morning and we'd sit there and all of us, seven of us, sit there together with Todd and go, okay. So it's about a kid who watches TV all day long. So what's the first thing? Turn Me On. Okay. So then we write the lyrics for Turn Me On and then we go for lunch and then we go back into the studio in the afternoon and we figure out what is the music for Turn Me On and how does it fit with the lyrics? And so we come up with the song. And then the next day we went in and went, okay, what's next? TV is King. Okay. All right. Okay. TV is King. And so we did the same thing. We write the lyrics in the morning, afternoon, write the song and record it. And I think the brilliance of that, not that it was intended, was that, you know, I think one of the things that drives me crazy most about songwriting is second guessing yourself. And, you know, oh, well, I'll try this and we'll try that. And well, let me change this and let me change that. And you second guess yourself again and again and again until you're back to the very first idea you had. You know, it's like you can't beat the demo. You know, you go in the studio and you have a great demo and then you try 18,000 different things and they all suck. And then you're back to the demo. And so we had no time. I can't say that it was intentional, because we had no time. We couldn't go back and redo it and re-record and fix this and fix that. So the record was one take. It was your gut. It was what you thought that day. I think that's a good way of doing things. And like I said, it wasn't intentional. We were backed into the position. And I think I love that album. I think that's a great album. But that was the last album we did on A&M. And then we went on to David. Like I said, with those, with the five producers that we had before him, we never had, never been exposed to a guy who was so brilliant that he would not accept anything less than perfection. And so we just worked and worked and worked and worked. We worked so hard on that record. Everybody did. And I think that's the best record we ever did. And I think, you know, with Talk to You Later and Don't Want to Wait Anymore and Amnesia and Attack of the 50-Foot Woman. Oh, my God. It's so fun. It's such, it's so great to perform it. It's just really, really fun.
And it's funny, as you pointed out, Dave, Todd Rundgren seems to be, for you guys, seemed to be a more obvious choice. So it's interesting to hear because people, you know, a lot of people we talked to talked about what a, you know, great producer he is.
Yeah. And, you know, we had known him. Prairie plays in his band sometimes. Prairie goes out with Todd on tour. And, yeah, and so we've, you know, Michelle Gray, a Tubes dancer, married Todd Rundgren. You know, the 1986 tour, the Love Bomb tour, Todd opened for us. We went out and toured all over, and Todd and Michelle fell in love and he ended up marrying her. And so there's a strong connection there. And he's, you know, he's kind of avant-garde. He's kind of like us. He's constantly doing something different. You know, every album he's got a new album, and it's a new show. And then it's the, you know, it's the Tiki Lounge show or this. I mean, it's just, he's never satisfied. He constantly is changing, and that's really cool, I think.
Yeah.
It's kind of the love connection in Tubes community, because Prairie also, he married Ree Styles, right? The singer.
Prairie never did marry Ree Styles, I don't think.
Oh, okay.
They were together Ree was our singer from the beginning until about 1980, I think, or 79. I think the Remote Control tour was the last tour, and she's just said, I can't do this anymore. I can't live in the damn bus anymore. Yeah. And they had been together at that point. They had been together, gosh, 15 years, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. And she left the band, and they stayed together for quite some time after that.
So you never replaced Ree for a female?
No, not really. We didn't replace. Well, we had Michelle and Cheryl, and we had Cynthia Rhodes, and they did some back. They were dancers, you know, and they did some background vocals, but we never replaced her in terms of her featured vocalist type person. And then after, in the kind of the second incarnation of the Tubes, we had another singer. We had another couple of singers here and there, but they don't last. They don't last on the road. The road is hard, you know, and they don't. We had one girl that was so worried about somebody seeing her naked, you know, because we're trying to do quick changes. And sometimes the quick change booth is just like a little plastic shack, you know, and she got so upset that I said, nobody cares. Okay. Let's just change. I'm not going to look at you. Nobody's peeking around the corner. But no, sorry. And that wouldn't work. And so she quit. Oh. She moved to New Zealand. I said, you went to New Zealand? Why would you do that? There's nothing but sheep there.
Had to get that far away.
Yeah, it had to get that far away from the Tubes.
Really?
Is there going to be any more acting in the future?
Well, I hope so. I want to do Hamilton. Okay, would you know anybody on Broadway? I want to play the King of England. Okay, I've got the song right here. You'll Be Back. Yeah. I know the song. I want to do Broadway so bad. I'm going to manifest this dream. And imagination creates reality. That's the theme of Completion Backward Principle. So, but I've done a lot of, you know, I belong to a theater company in Augusta, Michigan. It's called the Barn Theater. I'm a Barney. And there's a number of Hollywood actors who are also Barneys.
Jeff Daniels, is he? I would think he's from Michigan. He's in there, right?
Jeff Daniels, actually, yes. Jeff Daniels has his own theater in Michigan.
Yeah.
And he has performed at our theater at the Barn. And the Barn is a Quonset Hut milk barn. that was converted into a theater. It's about a 750 seater maybe, and it's beautiful, and it's just all pristine, and it's all red like a barn, and it says The Barn, and it's in right outside of Kalamazoo, about 5 miles in a little town called Augusta. And Augusta, I mean, let alone no stoplight, they don't even have stop signs. It's so small. And so I've been performing out there since, gosh, for about 20 years. My first time I went there was 98, and I did Rocky Horror. I did Frankenfurter in Rocky Horror, and I've done that about 100 times maybe. And I've done I did Spamalot with, it's funny, I keep channeling Tim Curry.
That's all right. That's a good guy. Nothing wrong with that.
I've done them all. Yeah. You know, he did King Arthur in Spamalot, and I did King Arthur, and he did Frankenfurter in Rocky Horror. And I did. And so anyway, usually if I can break away in the summer, it's been a couple of years. Well, it hasn't opened for a couple of years, right, obviously. But I think the last time I was there was 17, maybe. And we did Spamalot. But, you know, it's like a month long commitment. We go out, rehearse for 2 weeks, and then 2 weeks of performances. And it's really great. The kid who runs it, his name is Brendan Ragazzi. And his father started it, who was a Hollywood actor, and decided to, you know, go back to his hometown and open a theater. And he left Hollywood and went back and opened this theater. And then Brendan took over when his father died, and he's now the director of The Barn.
So cool.
And it's a EMC school. It's Equity Member Candidate School. So if you'd like to be a member of Actors Equity, you can go there. And after performing so many hours, I think it's 50 hours, they give you an equity card. And sometimes they have, you know, Tom Wopat has been there, and Robert Warner has played there, and they get Hollywood actors as well. And a lot of sometimes Broadway actors come out and do it. And, you know, sometimes they get rock singers from LA. Yeah. To come out.
Well, you have a number of characters, personas, on stage personas that they might need some fleshing out, that might play to, a stage show.
I haven't. It's funny. You know, I've done Quaalude for so long in the big shoes, right?
Yeah.
And the first time I went out to do Rocky Horror, the costume lady, you know, hands me the pair of open-toed pumps, and the heel is about that high. It's about 2 inches. And she goes, "Oh, I'm really good. You think you're going to be able to walk in these? They're 2 inches high." And I went, "I don't think it's going to be a problem." Okay. I showed her a picture of Quaalude's shoes. I said, "These are 18 inches. Okay. These are not a problem for me. It'll be no problem." So I don't think they didn't open. I know they didn't open in 2020, and they didn't open, I don't believe, this year either. And a lot of the kids are college kids, and they audition in like January. He goes around to different colleges and they audition, and they want to come to The Barn, and they want to be an equity member. And, you know, and they pick, I don't know, 20 kids, and then they do 8 plays, and you have to learn a new play in 2 weeks. You have to learn it, whatever it is, Rent or Sunset Boulevard or, you know, Rocky or whatever it is, whatever play they pick. You've got to learn it in 2 weeks and have your lines. And it's really good training. It's amazing. It's a great place.
Love it.
It sounds like something to look forward to every summer.
You did audition early in the 70s. You had an audition for Night Shift, right? That Michael Keaton got. What's the story behind that? I would have, that kind of makes sense.
I don't know. I had done a small part in a movie called Groove Tube. I can't remember. It was Procter and Bergman movie. And somebody knew somebody and said, "Will you," I didn't have an agent. And they said, "Will you audition for this?" And I thought for sure I was going to get it, you know, cause it was perfect for me.
Really?
But, you know, Michael Keaton got it. And I actually knew Michael Keaton. We played on a celebrity softball team, Hollywood Rollers or something. I can't remember what the name it was, but in Encino. And Mike Keaton was a shortstop, and I played first base, and he was good. He could play. So it pretty much killed our friendship. when you come forward. And I didn't.
All right, let me ask you about another film, which I know it wasn't necessarily an acting role, but I just rewatched this again last night.
Xanadu. Oh,
Xanadu. You watched Xanadu, Holly?
No, I only watched the scene. I only watched your scene. How was that an experience like that?
Well, Kenny Ortega was the choreographer for the movie.
So he's the Michael Jackson. So this is, right? This is serious.
Huge High School Musical.
Yeah, I just
all of High School Musical 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
He did Michael Jackson. He did Bette Midler. He did Cher. He did everybody. And he started with the Tubes. We met Kenny Ortega in about 1973 or 1974. And he had just come off a regional tour of Jesus Christ Superstar, where he was like a background dancer. And he saw us play one night and he said, oh, well, you got, and we were just, we had, you know, we were stumbling on top of each other and had no, you know, no choreography at all. And he saw us and he said, I want to be a choreographer. Can I help you put shows together?
Wow.
And we went, yeah, sure. Come on down. And, you know, so yeah, he started with us and he's amazing, amazing. I mean, he put our whole world together from the beginning, from 75 all the way to 86, 87. And he would go out on tour with us and he would, you know, rehearse with us and put dancers together with us. And
so was he responsible for you ending up in Xanadu?
Yes, he was. He was the choreographer. And he said, you know, oh, I got these guys. Wanted a band to play that song, got some dancing to do. And then the other, you know, they had like the 40s Andrews Sisters kind of song and that kind of, and then they merged staged merged together. Right. And that was definitely Kenny's whole deal.
Was that a tube song, Dan, that you were performing, or is that something that Jeff Willin wrote, or who wrote that?
No, it was John Parr, the producer, wrote that song.
Okay.
And people always ask us, you know, why don't you play Got Some Dances to Do? We've never played it, ever played it. You know, but that's supposedly the number two biggest cult movie of all time, behind Rocky Horror Picture Show. So funny that, you know, we're involved, you know, I'm involved in both of those. And then another movie I did was The Fabulous Stains with Laura Dern and Diane Lane. That was Laura Dern's first movie, and Diane Lane and Ray Winston and the guys in the Sex Pistols, Paul Simonon from The Clash, and Lou Adler directed it. And who was also, you know, instrumental in original Rocky Horror Show.
Yeah.
It's a funny, small world. It's
all
a really
tied together.
Movie.
Right.
Yeah. And the writer for the movie, you know, they Steve and Paul, they wouldn't say her lines. They said fuck for like every other word in the movie. Whatever their line was, there was 3 or 4 fucks in it. And she got so, she went, no, that's not the line. And she, every day, she was freaking out because they wouldn't say her lines. And she ended up quitting in the middle of the movie and just leaving and took her name off the credits for the movie. And Paramount it was a Paramount movie, and they were so upset by the language that they decided not to release the movie. The movie never got released, never. And now it's like a video cult movie.
Another cult, you know? Another cult classic. You're the king of the cult classics.
Boy, oh boy. And then Ray Winston. I mean, he was the leader of the punk band, Ray Winston. And he's turned into a massive star, yeah. You know, and big time. He was in all these Scorsese movies and I mean, oh, and just, Sexy Beast. I mean, really, he's really great. He's really great. He really made a career for himself. Yeah. So yeah, I have done some stuff, but I still want to do Broadway. My wife and I love to go to Broadway, and we haven't seen any Broadway in quite a while. But we've seen Hamilton like three times in New York City, and Come From Away, and we saw. The Temptations play, Ain't Too Proud to Beg. Oh, that was so great. And Network with Bryan Cranston was brilliant. It was so great.
I tell you, a Tube story, though, with your characters in there, there's something there, my friend. You got to take a screenwriting class, kind of learn how to put these together. Do the Lin-Manuel Miranda, and you'll be able to get on there.
Yeah, okay.
Some workshopping.
I would be surprised if you couldn't, based on just who you are, you should be able to meet with some of these people and get your way onto a Broadway production.
I'll manifest that.
That's right.
Okay. We will too for you.
I'll manifest that.
Right. Yeah. Tell us what you need.
Imagination creates reality. Right. Once again.
Okay. I guess other collaborations. You've worked with Richard Marx. He's like he's another guy that we wouldn't put together with you, but you guys work well together, apparently.
Yeah, Richard did the record, the Fee Waybill Rides Again record. Richard and I wrote all the songs. He produced. He's my best friend. I just saw him the other day. He's a brilliant. I mean, I think the greatest songwriter that I've ever known, the greatest vocalist I've ever known, the greatest producer I've ever known. He gets vocals out of me that I didn't know I had.
Yeah.
And the guy is a genius. And he lives here in Malibu. And actually, he just moved to the Valley. But
yay, go Valley.
We've been friends he met us in the studio. He met me in the studio with David Foster when we were doing Completion Backward Principle.
Yeah.
And he just some kid sitting in the back of the room. And at the end of the day, he goes, you know, hey, I really like your lyrics. Will you write a song with me? And I went, okay, well, sure. No problem. And so we became friends, and that was, gosh, what? 81, I think. So, you know, yeah,
was a kid in 81. Yeah, I mean, he was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He never will let me forget that he's 15 years younger than me. So he's a kid.
Are you in his book? He released a book this year.
Oh, yeah.
Have you read it?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
I've read it. There's quite a number of mentions of me in the book. Absolutely. Pretty. It's a good book. It's funny. There's some great stories in that book. And pretty accurate. I mean, his portrayal of me is pretty accurate. You know, maybe not all that complimentary, but you know, that's the way I am. You know, I mean, I say stupid stuff a lot. You know,
we all do. So, yeah, I put out feelers for you. Got to tell him to join our podcast. I put him some feelers to get Richard on our show, and I haven't gotten a response yet. But
okay, yeah,
we got to use our connections, man.
We're going to put, I'm going to do a live Fee Waybill show and perform my record.
Oh,
and Richard's going to help me put it together. He's going to help me put the band together and rehearse and get a set list together. And we're trying to figure out a venue where we can do, you know, a live. I've never done a solo show. Never. I've never done it. I've been Tubes my whole life. And I really want to perform this record. And he's going to help me put it together and be in the band also, you know, hopefully. Your never mind is never ending. Ever ready answers on your lips. You give new meaning to pretending. I'm waiting for the hangman's knot to slip. We'll be right back. So that's another thing we're manifesting, you know, troubadour, fee wabula the troubadour.
I would love that. That would be something. I'd love to see that. Oh my God. Yeah. That'll be the, yeah, that's the start of your Broadway resurgence. It's going to happen.
Yeah. There you go.
Start the troubadour, move it all the way. Yeah. Up the ladder. A lot of
people started at the troubadour. I mean, it's iconic, you know.
Rocky Horror started at the Roxy. That was
the Lou Adler thing.
I'm sure you were there.
I saw it at the Roxy before it was a movie, before it became a big hit. I saw it at the Roxy and, oh, I mean, Lou Adler, you know, we've been friends for years, and you know, he had a I don't know if he had a record company that was affiliated with A&M or something, but somewhere down the line, you know, we met, and Lou Adler, you know, hired me to do the movie in 1980 and to do the Fabulous Stains movie. Yeah. And I just saw him the other day. Well, not the other day, but gosh, you know, it's like 2020 disappeared.
Well, just say the other day. We'll believe you. That's fine.
Right. He was at Kenny Ortega got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and Lou was there, and I was there, and we hung out. And I remember he was wearing a bright yellow suit with shorts. Yellow shorts. It was classic.
Of course.
It was classic.
Thank you. This was such a pleasure.
Yeah, that was
such a total treat.
Very cool. Well,
thank you. Thank you both.
Yeah, appreciate it.
For having me.
Thank you for taking the time.
Right. Take care.
Okay, it's my pleasure.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Okay, we covered a lot of ground, but we didn't cover all the ground.
He is so fantastic, and he has had just such a great, varied career. And I think we will see him on Broadway someday. Don't you think he's deserving of that?
He is. He's created so many different characters, and can kind of just YouTube V Way Bill, and you'll see like all these different personas that he's played on stage and in film. I think it lends itself well to the Broadway stage. So one day we shall see him up there, I'm sure. Speaking of YouTube, we have a YouTube page as well.
We do have a YouTube channel. It is at the What Difference Does It Make podcast. And you can see lots, and you can see lots of Fee in his raw form today.
Excellent.
And the one thing that I am sorry about that we ran out of time, but you know, I as I told you prior to this podcast, to us talking to Fee, I have two really good friends who are huge Tubes and Fee Waybill fans, and I was hoping to get him to say a personal hello to Marge and Lisa, but
now's your opportunity. Give them a proper props.
So I'm giving the shout out to Marge and Lisa. I wish we had Fee who came up as John Waybill.
I'm sure they know that. They're Uber fans.
Yes, I'm sure. I'm sure they do. So Marge and Lisa, shout out to you. I know you will be listening to this, and thank you for that.
Hi, Marge and Lisa. New episodes every Friday. I look forward to it. So please subscribe to our podcast, and we will be back next week.
Don't you think we should tell them we're going to talk to you later?
Oh, would you like to take that back?
No, I would not. Okay. Save it for another day.
Oh, my God. Gotta go. We're proud members of the Pantheon Podcast family for now. I don't know after that if they're going to still stick with us. But for now, pantheonpodcast.com. Check them out. They've got some good podcasts as well. Okay, so until next time, this is Dave.
This is Holly.
Check you later.
Over and out.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Frunino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.